Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, your host here with Startup Hustle, founder of Marknology. Super excited about our guests every time. Colleen Monroe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. She said she just got done painting, which is like, I'm going to just share everything because this is how entrepreneurial really goes. Just, she's like, I just got changed from painting, threw some clothes on, didn't know we were doing video. I got her on. We have a couple live people with us today. So say hello. Anyone jumping in the chat, I'll try to bring it up for Colleen. But Colleen, you know, we're new friends. You know, I know very little about you, but I'm super excited to hear about your business specifically like this year. And, you know, I think I have a lot to share, you know, with what I've seen too, and how people have pivoted in during the pandemic and, you know, really just been an entrepreneur, continue to be an entrepreneur through like whatever comes up. Let's start kind of before today. Give me a little background on yourself, like kind of what got you here and got you into entrepreneurship.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like entrepreneurship runs through my veins. I mean, ever since, I think when I started out like 7 years old, I had a card and cleaning company and I'd walk around the neighborhood selling handmade cards or like offering cleaning services. And that's just kind of been the rhythm of my life till today at 32 years old now.
Well, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah. And when I was 17, moved to California with my dad and didn't really know what I was going to do. I actually had wanted to like pursue journalism, but I was a competitive Irish dancer at the time. So all I knew is I'm just going to dance and I'm going to waitress. And I was just taking some art classes at a community college.
That's super cool. Okay. So you're a professional Irish dancer.
I was.
Okay. Was. We have a lot in common, I think. Okay. So is Ohio considered the Midwest?
Yeah. I like to think. Right. I'm getting back to my Midwest roots because I just moved here to Kansas City, Missouri from LA about a couple months ago.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask. So, you know, you came back. I don't know if that's entrepreneurship or family or just random, like any answers are good, but like, we'll get to that. Just hold on just a second. I want to slow you down on this backstory. So you're a professional dancer, Irish, which is just, you don't hear that very often. Okay. And you're in school, community college. Mm-hmm. What else?
And, you know, I actually had found out about a small film school in San Diego. Didn't know I wanted to go into film, okay. But I always loved storytelling and I love journalism and went to the school. It was super, super small startup school. And it's just funny. My whole background has just been very untraditional. I mean, I grew up like homeschooled. I grew up like very off the grid. And so I guess I just always love creating things and kind of doing things that are off the common path, I guess. And so I found out about this really cool startup school that was focusing on just hands-on filmmaking and creative journalism. And so I moved to San Diego, went to school there, super small graduating class. It wasn't even accredited at the time. And I was a lot of the professors came down from LA to teach. So I went there to school for 3 years in San Diego. And then after I graduated, actually, so I ended up getting a degree in entertainment media. And I studied focusing on film producing and directing. And I actually I wanted to just like be like an Oscar award-winning producer. But I kind of found out about the world of costume design, though, while I was working or while I was going to school. And okay. I've always loved fashion and art and making things. I sewed and made things my whole life and just always had an affinity for that. And so I found out about costume design when I was in film school and kind of pivoted away from producing and directing. I had already done several internships up in LA for producing and directing with different studios. But then I realized I could merge my just love for fashion with filmmaking and mm-hmm. costume design. And I just became obsessed with it. And when I become obsessed with something, I just like immerse myself into it 150%.
All in.
All in. So yeah. I actually was like, okay, so I want to make it in Hollywood as a costume designer. What do I need to do? So I actually took a job at the school I went, at the school I graduated from. I was just working in development by day. Okay. And then I started a podcast actually on costume design. It was the only costume design podcast. And it ended up getting...
What year was that?
I didn't even know what podcasts were at the time. I didn't know any of the software to use to edit. And I just had to Google it all. I think it was 2010 I started the podcast.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm going to figure out how to meet all the costume designers and all the craftspeople in the film industry, because no one was really highlighting the behind the scenes crews. Mm-hmm. And so I would sometimes skip work, or like on the weekends, I would drive up to LA and go to all the film events, all the costume design events, all the fashion events, and just started interviewing every single costume designer in Hollywood.
We could stop the podcast right there for anyone listening, like, you know, how you figure out what you want to do, how you go all in, how you learn about something you don't know about, like how you start. Just go talk to people.
Yeah,
like talk to people doing what you want to do. Like, yeah. You know, I don't think that's a big Midwestern thing. I think that's more like a coast thing, East Coast, West Coast. My cousin went to school in DC and he was like, are you doing like these informational like lunches, you know, like it's not even about sales, you know, it's just like, yeah, you're just like going to pick their brain. I'm like, yeah. No, I've never heard of that. Like, you know, we don't do that. But it was like kind of revolutionary for me to think about, I can just ask these people. And I started doing that, you know, in the last 6 years on my own as well, like here, just being like, I want to learn more about PR, you know, and then just like seeking out someone that knows a lot more than me and asking them for coffee, you know, I'd be surprised. So, okay. I didn't mean to take over, but I think that was a huge home run. I wanted to hit on that. Is just like, you're like, I was just going to LA and I was just talking to as many costume designers as I could find. Where'd that take you?
Thank you. No, it was a hustle. So I did that for a year and I was just collecting business cards. And honestly, for me, I just saw it as like another form of education. Like,
yeah. There
were no books. So I was just like, I'm going to learn.
School.
Yeah. I was just like, I'm going to learn from the people on, you know, on the ground in the trenches working. So I eventually saved up enough money that year I was working at this school, to have my first month's rent in LA. And so I quit after a year and I moved up to LA, took a waitressing job, and just started calling every single business card I collected that whole year on the podcast. And I ended up reaching out to the costume designers on Boardwalk Empire, HBO's Boardwalk Empire. I don't know if any of you have seen it.
I have.
The Godfather in a TV show, and they were filming season 4 at the time in New York. And the designers actually were in town in LA for 3 days when I happened to email them. And I was just like, hey, can I meet you for coffee? I'm new to the film industry. I really just want to learn more about the costume design world. We met earlier this spring at this fashion event where I interviewed you and they remembered me. So I called in sick to my waitressing job because they're like, yeah, come meet us at our hotel tonight.
It's always immediate.
Oh man. So I was just like, all right, whatever it takes. So scrambled over to the hotel. And 15 minutes in, she was like, you want to move out to New York and assist me on season 4? And I was like, yeah, totally. Like, I had never been to New York. I had no friends out there. And they're like, can you move in 2 weeks? So I just threw all my stuff into a friend's garage and put my car in their garage. And I took a flight out to New York. And I hit up every single friend I knew. I was like, who has a friend in New York I can just sleep on their couch with for like a month so I can figure out housing? Because I knew I got the job. I just had to figure out how to actually like.
And maybe it's 6 weeks or 8 weeks before you get paid. And like, yeah.
Whatever it took. I was like, this is my break into the film industry. And I was like, I'm not going to let this go to waste. So, yeah, so I flew out to New York. I never worked on such a big studio film project before. And Boardwalk Empire at the time had won so many Emmys. So it was the biggest TV project in New York.
Wow.
And honestly, in the industry at the time, we had some of the best craftspeople, the best costume designers working on that show. So I was so grateful to actually have this opportunity.
So did she not have an assistant or like what set that up?
So I was there like, so they had assistants everywhere. I was the costume designer's personal PA assistant. So I did everything from picking up feather boas in downtown New York to helping to dress the actors to going to fittings with Steve Buscemi, like literally anything creative that the costume designers had to do. If I had to pick up special beads, I was like their right-hand girl. We had the biggest inventory of 1920s clothing. And so I helped to source some of that and all the fabric. And so it was like, yeah, baptism by fire, being thrown onto such a big project, having just come from a waitressing gig. And yeah, it was the hardest 10 months of my life. I didn't sleep like a wink. I think it was like 15, 18 hour days sometimes.
Yeah.
But man, it really, it shot me headfirst into the film industry. And because I'd wanted to be an award-winning costume designer.
You know, I think the number one thing I would say, like people are just like, how do you get started in entrepreneurship? Like, what's it take? Like, you know, those questions, and they're generic, but they're just like, that's where people are starting. And I just had my partner from my real estate business on the podcast before you. And we were talking about, you know, there's no way around the work. You just have to do the work. And like, you have to jump all in. We were talking about being all in and not really being passionate about things unless I'm all in. Otherwise, it's just kind of a backup plan. And there's nothing like the first year is just so much work. It's the only way to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think when you're in the grind and you're doing it, it's just looking back, I'm like, oh my God, how did I do that? But when you're in it, you just get into this flow and this focus. Yeah.
People are always like, you know, probably giving me a lot of shit about working too much, which I hear, you know, but I love it. And it's like, I love, you know, building this thing, and it's like, it doesn't feel like work when I'm in it and time just flies. And you know, I am about balance, and, you know, I am about trying to at least seek it, you know, there is a balance of 100, like 0 to 100, and being completely aligned on another side, like an obsession kind of side, an all in kind of side that, gets you some places that 50-50 doesn't, you know?
Yeah,
so something like saying I'm going to New York.
Even work-life balance, because it doesn't necessarily make sense to find that happy medium. Sometimes it requires you to be all in, and then other times it's like I'm shutting off all my devices and I'm going to be completely focused on my friends or my family. Like this idea of like trying to strike this perfect rhythm, that can actually in itself just make you go mad, because that just is impossible. I mean, when you actually are an entrepreneur and you're trying to build something, sometimes you have to sacrifice certain things to get to that next step. It's not always forever, but I just believe like we live in seasons, and depending on the season that you're in, like it just requires a different energy level, different capacity to like focus. So,
and I think it's hard when the seasons change. Like, I just, you know, because I think I'm in this season and then, you know, it switches essentially. And then you got to reassess and be like, okay, it's a different season. And now I need rest, or I need, you know, whatever you need, more personal time or this or that. For me, it's usually just like, I have no problem when I'm in the season. It's more so like the transitioning between them sometimes can be difficult, and knowing that it's there. But I've been through several of those for sure. Just, you know, if you're only taking advice that's like, be balanced, like, you know, make sure you're spending enough time for self and yada, yada, yada. To those people, I say, like, whoever has accomplished anything great doing that, you know, and who has ever like really changed the game, whether it's even just changing the game in your own life, to go from a server to one of the biggest TV sets at that time. It takes an action like saying yes. And the reason the lady probably was like, we'll find a spot for her, because when you've actually like done something, like I'm sure the boss was that had hired you, had done a whole lot of things to arrive where she was. It's more about the person than it is like, you know, I think this person has it. They're literally driving up to LA to interview me. She's still on me. She finally made the move here. Like, this girl is trying to do it, and I would rather bet on someone that's like all in than someone that's like, I've been an assistant for 4 years and I was on, you know, XXX. At least someone that's like, you know, in that stage myself of like trying to hire the right people and make the right moves. For me, it comes down to, you know, just seeing that ambition, seeing that passion, I guess, is really, that's it. So I guess I was trying to dig in a little bit and I went down a rabbit hole, but I was trying to dig into like why, you know, what the position was like, had she just like lost an assistant and needed someone and kind of made this spontaneous decision, or did they kind of create a place for you?
I think they created a place for me. I don't really know, actually.
You're just like, I'm here. There's a lot of stuff to be done. Let's get to it.
I think they just needed someone assisting just the costume designers, because it was fast and furious and they were down people. And I don't know, the moon's aligned and I just happened to like meet them at the right time. I was a little shocked that it happened so fast. I mean, it was about a year in the making of just planting those seeds and meeting people, but from the time I met them to like moving out to New York, it was so fast.
Yeah, it happens. It's slow but fast. It's like, I don't know, the year feels like a lot of days, but like all of a sudden you're like, how did that happen? Did you leave family behind? Did you leave a boyfriend, significant other? Like,
I mean, it kind of ties in with what we were just talking about, just like a season of focus. I am sometimes a crazy person. I just like, one, I just throw myself into things. And my focus at the time was just, I didn't like date at all, like through my 20s at all. I mean, I think at the end of my 20s, I was just like, I get so focused on wanting to, sometimes, you know, to my detriment, I need to like go back and actually focus on personal relationships, which I'm working on right now. But, I was just so driven by this dream. And when these doors started opening for me, like going out to New York and pursuing film, like I knew that had to be my focus. And I don't really believe in multitasking and trying to juggle all these different things. And I was like, if the opportunity is given to me, I'm going to go all in. I don't want to get emotionally involved with a boyfriend right now. And this is the sacrifice I want to put in right now to pursue a dream. And I just like went all in with it.
For me, it was my first business was being in a band. So I moved from Hawaii in 07, found a band, like having auditions off Craigslist, and went and did tryouts. I didn't know anyone here in Kansas City at that time. Like, I'd been here off and on as a kid, but like had been in Hawaii for 4 years and then, you know, was in Africa before that. And so, it was just like homeschooled and all those things. Right. Oh, wow. And, but thinking outside the box comes naturally to me. Why? Yeah. Because I've taught myself everything, you know, for the most part with a guide, you know, curriculum. But it makes it easier when you haven't had someone tell you every single thing to think and do. To think differently than what everyone else thinks and does, because like you weren't given that structure, you know? But so for me, it was the band, and we call it slaying the tour dragon in the industry a little bit, but it's like, if you're a musician, almost everyone has this like, desire to tour, you know? And like, if you're really in, it's just like, you're trying to get to the, like, you're trying to get on the road. You're trying to get people to like hear your music and network and meet people. And it's like driving to LA and interviewing people, you know, every night is a new venue, new chance to like meet someone that's going to like introduce you to someone, you know? Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people,
It's a building season.
Right. Yeah. It's
growing your building. Yeah. That requires a lot of focus.
You don't even know what you're doing. Like, you're just, I mean, that's what I was telling you a little bit before we started the show. Like, I've been a painter. I worked at warehouses. I've been a security guard at a casino, you know, bartending for 7 years. Yeah. It was all to tour. It was all to tour. Like, everything revolved around my practices, my shows, like hitting the road. And I remember that, like, it was, I just realized that I wasn't going to make any money doing that. At some point. And that's when I like, you know, took my degree, which is my backup plan, and ran with it. But it was an absolute passion. And it was like, look, you can't do anything with excellence, like just like barely in. And I don't know if that was like being raised as religious as I was. It was very conservative, like upbringing.
Same.
That, and, you know, I agree. And I'll try not to like harp on that too much, but like, I was like, you know, maybe it's because they raised you like, don't be one like half on the fence, like, you know, one leg over, like you're either like in church or out of church, or it's the worst of both worlds. If you're going to like sin, so to speak, go sin, like, you know, like get it out. And if you're going to come to church, like be in church.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it's just the type of person that I am. But for me, it was always like, if you're going to do something, like go do it, go all in. Okay, so bringing it back. So you finish up Boardwalk season 4.
Yeah.
Where are we?
So I was still doing the podcast at the time because I was like, I got to keep networking to like stay in the biz. So I was interviewing people out in Hollywood, in LA, different costume designers there. And one costume designer who was doing all the superhero films, Michael Wilkinson. I had interviewed him and he was working on a movie, Batman versus Superman. And he's like, you know, I might have some spots open for you to come out here. He's like, just hit me up next time you're in LA. And I was like, well, I don't know when I'm going to go in LA unless I intentionally go to LA. So again, like these moments, I think I thrive in the unknown. I thrive in like when you have $100 in the bank account.
Like a pandemic.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you just don't give a fuck. And you're like, I have to just jump into this.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Season 4 wrapped on Boardwalk Empire. I really want to go work in the heart of the film industry, which was in Los Angeles. I was meeting more and more people there. And also I just, you know, I miss the mountains. I miss California, but I think I wanted to move back to LA just based on a conversation I had with Michael Wilkinson. I get these little hunches where I'm like, I think this could lead to something. There was no job offer or anything. So I ended up just shipping my stuff back to actually to San Diego to a friend of mine where I was housing all my stuff for free. She was such a blessing. Love her. And moved out to LA or San Diego for 2 weeks. And just I had messaged Michael Wilkinson when I got back to California. I was like, hey, I'm back in town. You want to meet up? And he was like, oh yeah, sure. So I drove up to LA and he actually had just filled that spot to work with him in the costume department. But he's like, why don't you drive over to meet my buddy who's working on Night at the Museum 3. They're looking for someone. And at that time too, so I just have to pause for a moment. Something that has driven, I think just propelled me forward and given me confidence is, you know, Seth Godin,
yeah,
marketing guru. So I had read his book like 10 years prior, and it's just been really inspiring to me, Purple Cow, and this idea of being remarkable and setting yourself apart. And so I was like, well, how do I get people to notice me in the film industry when I come back to LA? So I actually had hit up all the costume houses with my resume, which I'd printed on fabric. And I had printed my business card in costume design to tag all the costumes. You print it on a manila tag, a yellow manila tag. So I printed my business card on that and I safety pinned it because you safety pin it onto the costume, onto my resume. And I just went to all the costume houses and I made that resume for the costume supervisor of Night at the Museum 3. And I walked in and he like held up my resume, which was fabric. And he was like, what's this? But he's like,
he loved it. Yeah. He loved it though.
Yeah, he did. He was just like, wait, he like actually looked up at me where he was a tough egg to crack. He was scary. So he's like, okay, I'll come in next week and you can start work. So I was like, great. I mean, 2 weeks into California, I like didn't have a job lined up. I had like $100 in my bank account. I didn't know how I was going to make it. They hired me the next week. But it wasn't easy, that transition, because
floating.
What's that?
You're floating in between.
I was floating and my car. So on the first day, I drove up from San Diego to LA for the first day on my job. And I was driving this broken down minivan and I was halfway to LA and it broke down at 5 a.m. on the first day of my job. And in order to do my job, because I'm like picking up fabric and costumes and things, like you need a car, and my car broke down. So I got a taxi cab for $350 just to make it to the set on time by 8 a.m. And when I got there and showed up, I didn't have a car. and they're like, well, you're no use to us. And I was like, I'll figure this out. Can someone drive me to a rental car company? But because I didn't have any paychecks from California yet, and I didn't have a credit card, all I had was a debit card, none of the rental companies were renting to me. I think I was like 23 at the time. So I was like below 25.
No, well, Uber? Was there Uber?
There was no Uber or anything. Like, and so I finally got to the last car rental place and I just like broke down. I was like, you don't understand. I need to eat. Please rent me this car. And they rented it to me and I actually was able to keep the job.
Hell yeah.
That was a rough patch.
But you also like, man, just hearing that is inspiring. Like I had those memories, you know, I don't tell them like that or remember them in that way. But it's like, whenever you've been through that and you go through the next one, you go through the next one, you hit that bottom, you think there is no other bottom, you know, in some way you're just like, man, every single time shit happens, mm-hmm. I get punched in the face. I somehow figure it out. I get up. So far I've gotten up every single time, you know? And so then you start to just build this confidence. That's like, you know what? Like actually, like you can punch me, you knock me down. Like I'm going to get back up. You can like literally take my car out. I have to be there on time. I won't have a car. I have to have a car to have the job, like figure it out, you know? And that's really, you know, it's just very inspiring. But I think that everyone's story, not everyone's story, but a lot of stories of entrepreneurship start with that toughness that just like you start to be able to like trust yourself, trust your ideas, trust your gut to get it done.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I had all the trust then and I was,
you haven't. Yeah. But you get it now, right?
But, like, you know, it's increased my risk tolerance. I think all those things just like helps you take more, you get more confident about taking more risks.
Figure it out.
Yeah. And to figure it out. Cause like you're in the present moment and it doesn't make you, I have started to get too far ahead of myself. And I think back to those moments where I was like, you know what? I just have to think of the next challenge in front of me and the next step. Mm-hmm. So after that, I just ended up working on different other TV shows and film sets and commercials and music videos.
And stayed in California?
Yeah, in LA. And then got a little burnt out in the film industry.
Okay, so let's start there. Like, I want to bring it to what we're doing today. Before we go there, a quick shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Talking about the next chapter, so you get burnout. I've had my own insecurities as a person. We all do, you know. And I got an opportunity to model. Like, this was like 2015 or 16. I don't know. A friend was at a modeling agency. They had a request for someone with a beard and tattoos. She sent him my Instagram. I don't think there's a lot of models with beards and tattoos in Kansas City. I'm not really sure, you know? And so maybe I got it by default. But the next thing I know, I'm showing up on a set of a Hershey's Take Five candy bar.
What?
Yeah, that was my first shoot. I think I got paid close to $5,000 for that shoot.
Oh my gosh.
They used like a hand photo. And so it was like two photos. I didn't know that was even a thing, but they used like two, yeah. You know, you get paid retroactively. I didn't even know it was happening. Like I just showed up. But I was like a union model for a year after that. I think automatically got that assigned me to the union for that shit. And I did a Twitter one and I did a couple more. And so that was one, I did it just to conquer my own fears, my own insecurities, honestly. And then it turned out to be just like kind of a little bit of fun because I owned my time at that point. But it was chaotic. Oh my goodness. I was like, I was already at that point in my business. I was like, if I have to, like, I wouldn't be a model if they paid me like a ton of money, or like, I wouldn't like work in this industry. Cause everything was like 30 minutes ago. Everything was 30 minutes ago. Like, you know, it's just so fast paced. I can't imagine doing that for like an extended period of time and not being burnt out. Yeah, it's this comparison industry a little bit, you know, in that regard. During like the Hershey's one was easy, but the Twitter ones, you're like, there's people there that you're competing with or trying out with, like, just exhausting. I don't know. That's how I think about it. You know, there's an allure to it, but over time, you know, I don't know. How long did you do that?
Yeah.
How long were you in that space? Yeah.
In the film space?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of hard to say, because I, up until even this past March, I still had one foot in the film world, because I was styling for Mattel, commercials or photo shoots for like Barbie or, you know, Hot Wheels. So I've always kind of like still dabbled in it, but like that was back, I decided to kind of jump out of the film industry full time in, I think it was like 2000 and like, I don't even know, 16 or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in LA.
Yeah. Well, at the time I was getting more and more, it was more like the lifestyle too, that I just didn't want to sustain forever. I think there's actually so much abuse that's happening in the film industry. It's actually very dated in how they approach, you know, just how they treat their workers and film crew people. And I didn't know if I necessarily wanted to be on the film union. I was actually about to get into the Costume Designers Guild, but I just didn't want to be part of being conformed to just union shoots. Like, it wouldn't give me opportunity to kind of go off and do my own thing. And I think it was the entrepreneurial spirit that was just like kicking in. A lot of people were burnt out in the film industry. And I just, I think there's awesome things that happen, and I'm so grateful. I got to work on some of the most incredible projects, and I've met some of the most incredible people, but the lifestyle that I actually wanted wasn't working in the film industry full time. And at the time, I was getting really passionate about, because I was working around fashion, I was getting more interested in conscious and sustainably made fashion, just because it was, at the time, and it still is, it's getting a lot better now, but just like the second biggest pollutant in the world, and a lot of I just wanted to, a lot of abuse that was happening in the film industry, and I was just getting really interested in wanting to start my own clothing company, design company, that was around conscious fashion and bringing awareness to more sustainably made clothing, and kind of highlighting the abuse that was happening in the film industry. And I think I was just a little, it was a bit frustrating just running 100 million miles a minute. And I didn't feel like I was making a difference in the world. And, I felt like if I had my own business and I was passionate about the mission behind it, it was something that was just on my heart. I wanted to make an impact through a company that I actually could create and launch.
I think a lot of us start there. A lot of founders. You know, it's just, I was someone that was all in, even for corporate companies or start like working for someone else. I was all in, whether it's a server or a painter, or warehouse worker, like I did my job all in. And eventually I just got tired of going all in for people that weren't all in for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe that's the selfish thing. I don't know. But it was like, look, if I'm going to work for other people, it better be for a really good cause. Mind you, Mike, I'm a fourth generation missionary kid. Like, you know, there's like purpose, you know? And so for me, that was like just a matter of time that I was like, I'm never going to be happy doing this. Whatever it is. And it's not that I've changed the world with my business by any means, but I would like to think that I've changed some people within my reach, you know, through my company. And that continues to grow, obviously. And it's like definitely a long game before you're getting anywhere close to changing the world. But it really comes from like seeing a need and really wanting to help. One of the things Marknology does is like we help a lot of small businesses get like national exposure on the biggest marketplace, you know? So it's like, when I see a small brand really start growing, in a way it feels like, you know, helping that mom and pop or, you know, that other small business or someone else with a dream, like yourself, for example, that's like, I have really great stuff. I'm trying to get exposure. Like, you know, what can we do with it? And, versus just helping who, like, you know, it was like, just, it did nothing for me at that point. So just sharing, like, that's, I think, you know, with all the similarities in like founder stories, you know, whether it's like someone helping a dad that has a disability, or, you know, maybe it's a loved one that has a diet needs, you know, or different things like that, they create products, food products. A lot of stuff gets, you know, created, a lot of good things get created, things that stick around get created out of that need. And for people looking for that thing, or what's that thing to make that move, you know, one thing I'd say is that I just started looking at what was best for myself, and not in like a crazy selfish way, but in like a self-love kind of way. Absolutely. That was like, as I started paying attention to that, and I got better as you go, kind of like being in the gym, you know, it was like from there I could give to others, but I couldn't give from others until like that was full. And it's like it's a personal thing. It's a business thing too. And like, I had nothing to give. Those things all came when I started seeking that. I sought that, everything else came after that. So for me, it's like, where do you want to start? Mm-hmm. Start figuring out, you know, you have to eat. You have to eat, of course, but like, you know, you have to
eat a lot of PBJs in my lifetime.
Right. It's like my buddy still brings ramen noodle over to the house. And like, we definitely, you know, can eat better than ramen noodle these days. And I'm just like, man, I couldn't touch that if you like, you know, paid me $100. I'm just like, for me, not that I'm too bougie or anything like that, but it's like, I ate so much 20 cent ramen noodle, you know, for like to survive, like, you know, I can't. But you know, I think we get a lot of listeners that it's that confusion. Some of us are like, you jump in and then we figure it out as we go. A lot of people are like, you know, want a plan. But the best ideas, you know, the best businesses come from seeing a need, or whether it's within yourself or in an industry like Amazon or in the fashion, you know, in waste eco stuff. Starting there with intent is the best place to start. And I think,
and you start, and then it's never that thing that is gonna, I feel like, necessarily gonna take off. You always build on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I had started a fashion company and now I'm doing flowers. Like, I never, but I wouldn't have gotten to where I'm at today unless I kind of took that step. Mm-hmm. Everything I've noticed has just like built on itself, or opened up doors, or I've met people through that experience that has come to fruition today. Like, I just see them all as, like I said, like lily pads that lead you to the next step, even if it's not that thing.
Okay. So we were talking about, I want to be cognizant of time, so I want to get to where we're at today. So like, let's fast forward. You leave, you said you were in that industry, even kind of in a little bit, like still doing like styling stuff and production stuff, mm-hmm. taking gigs, maybe like consulting. You started a fashion company?
Yeah. So I decided, I was like, I'm going to run full force in running. It was a clothing company of workwear for women with more flexible jobs. So women who work at co-working spaces and don't want to necessarily wear jeans and a t-shirt, but also don't want to dress corporate.
They like it.
Cool and casual. Or we're bike commuters and want to look chic and stylish for like a meeting with a client. because this was kind of my life right now. I worked such a flexible type of work lifestyle, but I still want to look professional when I had a meeting.
Saw a need.
Yeah. So I spent a year on the Kickstarter campaign, sending out emails, building an audience through an email list and updating people on my process. I sold my car for 2.5 years in LA and just biked everywhere in order to fund the startup costs for that. And in order to pay for fabric and patterns, this is where flowers comes in. I took some gigs at some local flower shops. I didn't know anything about flowers. I used to make fun of my roommate at the time because she would like come home from Trader Joe's with like a $7.99 bundle of tulips. And I'd be like, those are just going to die. Why did you buy those? And now this is my life. So I sold my car and I just started gigging at different flower shops in order to pay for fabric and patterns to get the Kickstarter off the ground. So a year into that, I launched the Kickstarter and funded it within a week. I funded the first round of production and didn't go into the red once, which is pretty rare for a fashion startup. And it was awesome to be able to ship product and bring an idea from your head there that was on a sketch to life. Manufactured it locally in Los Angeles. But as I was manufacturing products, I started getting clients of my own and flowers because weddings, events, and corporate companies started approaching me because I think my background in doing costumes since I was working in set design and props, I just always have loved building things with my hand or full on space design or installations. So I started finding myself in this niche in the flower world doing installations for corporate experiential events. And I just remember vividly this moment. This was kind of the fork in the road moment where half my car was filled with flowers and the other half was filled with fabric for the factory. And I was so burnt out. Again, I keep reaching these burnt out phases. And I was like, I have to choose one. Like, and I was getting more money from flowers at the time. And fashion, I just would have needed some investors to keep going. And so I decided to pause the clothing company and just run with the with the flower business full speed ahead. And just went all in and found myself then. That was in 2018 when I launched Floralume.
Okay.
Long ago. Yeah, I just started getting little jobs and then bigger ones with clients. And corporate companies and brands started approaching me to design like immersive experiential events or installations. And so that's where I ended up before the pandemic. Yeah, so... I do think my focus with Floralume has been kind of an accumulation though of all my creative experiences together, having worked in film and set design and now fashion. Because honestly, at the end of the day, I love telling stories, which was originally why I went to film school. And I love understanding a client and what their motivation is. And I kind of see them as a character in a costume design. I would read the script. Okay. It was about the story that lend itself to the design. And so I approach that with Floralume is I really want to know my clients and their branding and their colors and what kind of story they're trying to communicate. And then I design with that in mind. So
I love that. And I love that in the episode right before this one, it's talking with Brian and we were literally on the same thing. And so it's kind of crazy that you bring it up. You know, it was like he was military intelligence background, grew up in South Korea. Yeah. You know, I was creative band dude with a computer science degree. You know, we started a real estate business together. And his ability to research deals and you know, find great opportunities. And my ability to, you know, systemize some things and scale things from my tech background and, you know, the ability to understand e-commerce. So things for like Airbnb and photography and decorating them and things like that. It was like the accumulation of all of our skills up to that point, you know, that set us up for the business we're doing now. And I think that's one thing that when I first got into business, I didn't look at. And it was just like, I have no qualifications to be here. Well, who says, you know, what, like the real qualifications are, you know, what got you to here, you know, and if you have that to get you to here, you're like ready for the next step as well. And I've honestly been spending the last couple of years just digging back into my past in a more accepting way, in a way that's like, what can this chapter teach me if I reevaluate it differently? From a different perspective than from just like, you know, a lot of times we look back and I wouldn't say I have regret, but you kind of see things in a certain light. And being able to be like, how can that help me in my job today? Like, you know, how can that help me in my person today? Has been really big. And I like, so, I mean, for me, you're saying that like everything you had done in fashion and film, you know, set you up to make these arrangements and tell stories. And mine's like problem solving. I love telling stories, but I love solving problems. So I came to that conclusion during the pandemic because it was, I really wanted to think about if I would lose my identity if I lost my business, you know, this year. And I think most of us had some of those thoughts go through our head, you know, and I wanted to make sure I was going to be okay. I didn't want to blindside me, not blindside my business, but blindside Andrew. You know, from being like, am I still going to have an identity if Marknology is gone and, you know, businesses stop paying or something like that? And I was like, yeah, because at the end of the day, I just like solving problems, you know, and helping people.
You like, you know, that's true.
And I hear that in you. And I just wanted to like kind of echo that sentiment that when you know that, it allows you to let go of control a little bit. Yeah, and happiness to me is when, like, when you can figure out how to let go of some of control, there's happiness on the other side of that. So if you know your why, it becomes a lot easier to decide to say yes to things, you know, and no to other things.
Yeah, I, you know what, it was because the pandemic really helped me to do exactly that thing, like to just go inward and really edit everything that I'd done up to this point and figure out what is the one thing that drives me.
Okay, right before we get into, I want to know like what you're doing this year during the pandemic, but I want to give one more shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Fullscale is a company that is founded by the main host of Startup Hustle, Matt DeCourcy. For anyone that's listening, Fullscale is a go-to if you have any kind of software development needs in your company. You know, whether it's websites, whether it's development, whether it's app development, fantastic team. I've used them myself. Can't compliment them enough. Colleen, let's talk about the pandemic and how you adjusted. I was in a small business accelerator when the pandemic kind of first hit, Babson College in Boston. And the 10K Goldman Sachs SB, for anyone listening, I know there's a lot of alumni out there. So it's a great community to be a part of. I didn't really know what I was getting into. Someone just told me to apply and I did. You have to be kind of an established business to be in. So it's not like right at the beginning. It's more like you have to have 10 plus employees and be a business a certain amount of time.
Awesome. Congrats.
Thank you. But first, I was like studying. You know, you meet a team that you're with kind of the whole, like for the master certificate, you get like a master certificate for going through it and you get this small team you're a part of. You meet them in person in Boston. It's this whole affair. It was pretty cool. And they pick you up in a black car and like, I'm from the Midwest, you know, like that stuff is cool. Yeah, it was dope. I was like, this car's for me. Like you guys have a plan. No, but I rock the part. I'm just like, okay, you know.
I'm going to own this.
Yeah, this is natural, whatever. This is my first time.
Oh man.
And no, it was a lot of fun, but you get close with these people. There was over 150 people in the cohort. Wow. Pandemic hits right after we had all met in person. So we all meet in person in Boston. We go back home. We're going to come back again this year. And they actually changed the program to really be like kind of like an ER for businesses. And all of the instructors and the community was just like, who can help who? And I really feel like I was blessed to have this insight. Some leadership from the number one entrepreneur school in America, like number one. So the leadership was pretty solid, giving us advice, kind of like live advice. But seeing like everyone became vulnerable because it was founders talking to founders. at, you know, it's just similar to this podcast. This is a podcast for by founders for founders. So a lot of founders listening. And we were just like, stuff was real. It was like, we were all looking inward, like, what do we do? Like, I can't
even figure out it.
I can't study right now. Like, I don't want to do this master's, you know, thing. Like, this is not, I need to save my business or save someone else's business or like handle some real shit. And, but what I loved about it is everyone's being completely transparent. We had these weekly groups and I was seeing businesses drop. Like, we were down to like, I don't know, I think less than 50%. Honestly, we're still in the class. And this is like a big thing, you know, and it was like, sure, you see signs go up around the city, even here in Kansas City, and you think and you guess. But like when these are people you met that are like, I'm closing my doors on Tuesday, you know, it was like real eye opening for me and kind of just created this not dread, but gratitude to be in e-commerce. That's for sure. You know, and just being like, man, I'm like privileged to be in this space, like blessed to be in this space. But seeing real life people's stories, they were telling their stories, they were sharing them. It was a crazy time for me and for a lot of businesses. It was also really awesome to hear and see stories of like entrepreneurs coming back to life almost that you had never seen, you know. Here in Kansas City, we had Regard, you know, started doing hand sanitizer. We had Mean Mule start shipping, you know, beverages to people because they changed the, you know, the mayor changed the rules to allow us to ship, you know, alcohol or deliver it. Just cool stuff was happening. And for me, it was like invigorating. You know, you talked about you thrive in chaos. So have I. Like, I'm a wartime general, not really like a peacetime general. Yeah. And it was like
conflict.
I'm like, ready to go. Like, yeah. So it was exciting for me too. I almost felt a little level of like survivor guilt a little bit, like, you know, that I was enjoying this chaos that was happening. Let's talk about that. That's my perspective on, you know, some of this year and what I was seeing from my like businesses that had events, for example. They created like team building events. I was one of the guys that was there and he was just like, well, do I just like send PDFs of what to do? You know, like he's just like virtual events. Like everyone's kind of like figured some stuff out now, but when everyone was just like freaking out, there wasn't really like a clear path to go. You're arranging this experiential, you know, floral arrangements, like different stuff like that. Events stop. What's going through your head?
Yeah, I think like you, there was a bit of a moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. But now like looking at it, I'm like, so many incredible things have happened over the past 8 months now, just how people have changed. And yeah, I was working in the event industry. I had lots of projects lined up for this year. And literally overnight, everything canceled. And I was on a call with a couple of big brands and I just remember when they pulled out and they were like, well, we don't know what the future holds. I was just like, I've gotta figure out something. So this all kind of happened around Mother's Day. This past Mother's Day, I realized, you know, in LA, everyone was quarantined. A lot of people weren't going to be with their moms for Mother's Day. And I decided to come up with a shipped wreath making experience using all preserved flowers that wouldn't die. And I kind of tapped into my background having shipped tons of product for my fashion company. I kind of tapped into those e-commerce skills and worked with a friend of mine to literally in 2 weeks come up with the whole shipping process and ordering process for these wreath making kits.
Okay.
So that kids could send their mom an experience that they could have. And I wanted to pilot this idea of doing like a shipped creative experience through flowers. And we sold out overnight after I launched the idea and shipped off wreath kits all across the country and Canada. And I think for me, it was more just like proof of concept to just see if something like this could work. And it was so beautiful to get like screenshots of like moms and their kids and like FaceTime making this wreath together. Cause I think going back to what you were saying about your why is like, I was doing a lot of soul searching and I realized that it wasn't necessarily putting on these huge events that I loved. It was a lot of work. I think it was more of, I love creating experiences where people just for a moment can, it like takes away the grind, it takes away the hardships of life, and they just have this like beautiful moment just being with one another. That suspends the grind and
like a puzzle, kind of like a puzzle.
Yeah,
like for me, doing a puzzle with the family was like, I don't really like doing puzzles, but like when we're all four or five of us sitting around, like grabbing pieces, like, you know, trying to find where it goes on the board. And it's like, it's the simplest thing, but it creates like a moment, you know? And sometimes I've been like, I literally bought my sister a housewarming gift or like a random, it was a puzzle. And she's like, what is this? And I guess I was just like in this mood of like, just like, I miss this. Like, you know, I miss, you know, just this sitting around making a moment, like whether it's a puzzle or a wreath or whatever. I do have a question though, before you jump ahead, I want to know, how did you sell out overnight? Like how did you get exposure to it?
So a couple of different ways. I think for me is anytime I go to like launch a new idea, I try to build momentum leading up to it. So I had made like several announcements through my different platforms. I've kept up a pretty consistent email list over the years, and it started with my clothing line and I just carried it over into fashion, and people have been like just so supportive. And I kind of noticed with the pandemic, there was like so much love for small business owners and people just really wanted to support us. And I try to tap in just around Mother's Day when I know people, that's usually a big time for florists. And I just wanted to, I guess I just started spreading the word on Instagram and my email newsletter and just kind of promoting it to kind of gauge interest. And I mean, when I sell out too, like I only had enough product because the flower market was closed and I had to like scramble and order all this. Mm-hmm. And I think I did about 60 kits. And I turned my entire living room into a shipping fulfillment center.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, my roommate comes out and she's like, what's going on?
You're like, well, we sold out.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting. I was actually expecting to do maybe about like 10. So, so that was a scramble trying to fulfill those orders.
Yeah, it's awesome. When you're not set up to like, I had a nightmare the first time ESPN retweeted like one of my tweets about my new shirts. And didn't even know what Twitter was. Is my second tweet, I'll be honest. I just didn't mess with it. And like I'm like a techie that doesn't know a lot of tech or like stuff. So like I figured it out. ESPN retweeted, is like, check out these cool shirts. Yeah. Sold like over 200 shirts in one night. And I just always like just like printed the labels. So I'm like printing the labels, all of a sudden they all printed out. I'm like, these are all out of order. Like, oh my God, it was like chaos. So I had like, yes. I laid everything out, like, you know. But no, I wanted to actually like, that reminded me, I didn't want to interrupt you earlier, but you were talking about, your Kickstarter. Okay. And you talked about a year you worked on the Kickstarter. Okay. And then you launched and you hit your mark in what, a day, a week?
Yeah.
Okay. So for anyone listening, that's not normal. But that's like a perfect plan on how to do it. So many people ask about Kickstarters. They talk about Kickstarters. Like you have to essentially give a Kickstarter as much attention as you would starting a business that year. The Kickstarter is your business. So many people are just like, I'm going to put a video up, and, you know, then they're not successful, or they like do that thing, or they overpromise, they haven't made all the items yet. So like the Kickstarter hits and then, you know, they're having to figure that kind of stuff out. It sounds like you took some of that into this too, which was like building hype, for what's coming.
I think it's not so much hype. It's more relationships too. I think there is so much product out there. There's so many things to buy. And I know for me, I purchase things based off of relationships and who I know. And my Kickstarter campaign, I really wanted people to be invested in why I was doing what I was doing, which was trying to, you know, make a change in the fashion industry for better. Mm-hmm. And so keeping people updated about my journey, I think sometimes we're so focused on the end project that we're quick to launch and here's what we're doing, as opposed to inviting people on the journey to get invested in it. So people, I was telling people, hey, should I use this fabric swatch or this one? And I was telling them, I brought them inside the factory and showed them who was making the clothes. And so that whole year-long journey of inviting people to the beginning of my sketch to when I actually launched it, the Kickstarter, made people so invested that like when I launched the Kickstarter, I had friends who already knew what the product was, what the idea was. I literally posted one little thing on Facebook and it just like flew. And I had friends who wrote emails to all their community without me even asking them to, because I think they felt a part of it just as much as I did. And so I think as far as creating hype is, I just want people to be invested in the journey of like why I was doing what I was doing, because then you want to share it because you become invested in it.
Complete opposite of hype.
I guess so. I mean, yeah. Because hype, I feel like only lasts for a limited amount of time. Whereas I want people to be involved. Like I really like, even, you know, my Instagram followers, I love having relationships with them. I just want things to feel more personalized.
No, I think it's a home run. And that takes a long time. I think that's a big one. Everybody wants everything like tomorrow, but relationships don't work that way.
Yeah. And it's horrible too. Like, you know, exactly. I see people like, I'm on my bike or I'm on the bus with the fabric and the patterns. And I'm like, this is embarrassing. This isn't what a fashion designer looks like, but here I am.
But it is. I mean, I can compare myself to my mentors or, you know, to other entrepreneurs out there, but like everyone just has their own story and you got to own it. And like, for me, I feel like I know what it takes to be successful. It's a lot of work. That's what I think. I think it's a lot of work and people get that expectation wrong. And if like on my Instagram, I've been encouraging people to follow along, my hashtag is like, watch me work, you know, because it's like, look, I've been posting for 6+ years, not day in and day out, not with that consistency, but just showing that it just takes work, like consistent work over time and relationship building to say, hey, like I'm showing you what I'm doing. I'm showing you when I fail. I'm talking about those seasons, you know? And if you're following along, like it's exciting for both of us, you know, whenever, like I was always raised kind of in that tribe mindset that was like, a win for you is a win for me. Like, you know, if you pass a test, it's like we're all celebrating. And I think like that's just the basics of relationship. You know, a real relationship 101 is like just celebrating with each other. And when you create kind of that feeling between you and your, as a brand, mm-hmm. even if you're a brand of one, you know, truly like that's where it starts. But even if you're a brand of one, you know, people are very attracted to that. And that's like, I mean, in essence, that's the long version of, you know, what we're trying to do on Amazon too, like to bring it to that business is like, how do I in a page, you know, this could be a Colleen, you know, that's created this product with passion and like, this is her thing. And like, this is my chance to tell her story through photos or like, you know, copy on the page or a video, you know, that kind of brings that relationship to life in e-commerce. It's awesome. Where can people find your stuff?
So right now I am shipping the whole shipped experience that I told you about has now turned into something that even bigger than I expected. I'm now shipping out a lot of team building corporate events, especially with the holidays coming up. I just did one for Twitter. Tomorrow I'm doing one for Pandora. Next week's Wells Fargo. So I'm noticing I'm kind of like getting more and more involved in this shipped kit experience for virtual team building events.
Okay.
So
how does it work? Like, does someone, everyone, like, let's say everyone's virtual, everyone gets the kit and then you guys do it together, like mm-hmm. virtually.
Yeah. So I ship out the kits, like just a couple days ago, I shipped out 23 kits all across the country. Because now people are working remotely, so they're not necessarily in New York or Los Angeles, they're all moving across. So I ship it to them. I work with the host at the corporate company who's ever managing the team. And we schedule a day for me to lead the virtual workshop, and then everyone opens up their packages and we all create together. And it's been really fun to just see people from all across the country create this experience together. And I work with I use like all natural and dried products, and I want to create pieces that last. So I've been just reaching corporate companies have been reaching out to me, and I want to keep moving in this direction. And it's something that now I want to like scale. I want to grow this. And I've been to help me actually fulfill orders and pack kits. I have a partnership now with the New House in Kansas City. They're a shelter for women and children healing from domestic violence. And so a couple weeks ago, I set up a Floraloom studio in their shelter and hired on a group of women to help me fulfill kit orders. So
the journey, super awesome.
It was so awesome. And some of these women too, like, come from having run their own companies with their husbands and they like helped me to figure out the production chain and to make for a more efficient process. So I was learning from them along the kit fulfillment process. So this is something that I want to just keep running full speed ahead. I want to scale this shipped kit experience, and I want to provide this workforce development leadership program with some of the shelters around Kansas City.
That's incredible. We have another great KC company that works with women similar to that. So KC, got to give them a shout out. They've been here in KC, like working with, embattered women for a long time. So there's a lot of good organizations, and we're happy to have another one, by the way. Yeah. So yeah. Thank you.
And the orders that come in, I can offer more employment to these women.
I love it. Where can they find you? It's Flora, F-L-O-R-A, Loom.
FloraLoom.com. And if you go on my homepage, I'm actually working on updating. You'll see a button to my shipped wreath making kit experiences. And I'm getting ready to do a holiday wreath making kit and launching that soon. So that will go up on my site. And then I'm pretty active on Instagram and talk about showing behind the scenes and the work. I'm pretty active on stories. And I also do weekly bouquets at Billy's Grocery, which is downtown Kansas City.
Okay.
Billy's Grocery is a cool market and cafe. So I've been doing weekly bouquets for them there. And that's been fun.
I love it. It's been 3 or 4 years ago, but there was a big DIY website. He had made all these DIY kits for things like all across the board. It wasn't all floral. But his website was in the millions. So a little word of encouragement that the DIY thing is a good way to go, and continue to like just keep expanding and see where it takes you. Everybody, like, we like to work with our hands, you know, and I think we're bringing that kind of stuff back. And I think my mom used to make wreaths, now that I think about it, you know, I'm pretty sure that she did. So
I think, you know, we're just so over Zoomed right now with like so much virtual, and this idea of having like a tactical offline experience. I know I'm teaching it virtually, but like just having that online offline component, there's something really satisfying about building something with your hands. And I want to bring that.
Colleen, your story is incredible. We're lucky to have you here in KC, and we'll have to get to know each other a little bit better. And I'm going to have follow up with you in maybe a year, maybe less, have you back on the show. Let's see where things have gone. Because I have a feeling or a hunch, as you said earlier, that there's some different opportunities that are going to open up with what you're doing. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch you. Guys, you heard where to follow her. They'll be in the show notes. Her website will be there, social media. How long you been in Kansas City?
2 months today.
2 months. So if you guys are following on social media, say hello. Welcome to Kansas City, Colleen. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. And Startup Hustlers, let's give a shout out again to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. See you later.
All right. See ya.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.